Greil Marcus was last on the show to talk about his book Invisible Republic. He's one of today's most distinguished music critics. His subject is American popular music in all its forms, American popular culture, really. His other books include Mystery Train and Lipstick Traces. And sometimes he comes back to the same songs in book after book. And the new book, Three Songs, Three Singers, Three Nations, is no exception. You learn more about the songs and you learn more about America with each successive book. Greil Marcus is in the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California. Greil, welcome back to the music show.
It's great to be with you.
Let's talk about the fact that two of these songs, the ones by Bascombe Lamar Lunsford and Gishy Wiley, are songs that you have written about in previous books. Are you closer to understanding them?
You know, I don't know if I'm closer to understanding them. I love something that the historian Robert Cantwell said about Bascombe Lamar Lunsford's I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground, which is the song of his that I write about. And he says, learn to play the banjo yourself, study every printed version, give up your job and maybe your family, and you will not fathom it. It is a song that is absolutely made to resist analysis or interpretation, and yet it's just so wildly suggestive, and it can send any person or any mind off down many roads, in many roads of the imagination, even many roads of experience. You know, a song that begins, I wish I was a mole in the ground. You think, what? What? Who wants to be a mole? And then goes on, I wish I was a lizard. But it just instantly sparks this notion of I wish, and you go anywhere with that. I wish I was someone other than myself, and if I were to be someone other than myself, who would I be? Forget about who. What would I be? And so this song is just this extraordinary undertow that is also a challenge. I've written about this song probably starting not too long after I first heard it, which would have been around 1970. I wrote about it in Lipstick Traces in 1989, and yes, I've come back to it because it's become for me a touchstone, a talisman, a way of talking about all sorts of things. But with this book, I had the chance to really try to get inside of this song and go as far with it as I could, devote as much time and space to it as the song needed and demanded. And, you know, I've talked about this song with people over a period of, I guess, 45 years. I've taught it in classes and heard what students had to say about it, things that never would have occurred to me. I've heard it performed by all different sorts of people. And so the song has built its own little country that you can inhabit. And with this book, I tried to, if not, totally populate that country and give you a census report, at least come back with a map.
We should probably hear this song before we go any further. It was recorded in 1928. Bascombe Lamar Lunsford, I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground. The Tempe wants the $9 show. Yes, Tempe wants the $9 show. When I come over the hill with a $40 bill, tis, baby, where you been so long?
I wish I was a mole in the ground, Bascom Lamar Lunsford. It's one of the three songs, and he's one of the three singers in Greil Marcus's new book, Three Songs, Three Singers, Three Nations. The other two songs, by the way, are Gishy Wiley's Last Kind Words Blues and Bob Dylan's Ballad of Hollis Brown, and we will come to those. But Greil Marcus, you say it's a song about wishing, but it's not Somewhere Over the Rainbow, is it? It's a very dark song. I will root that mountain down. What does that even mean?
Well, I think it means I want to destroy. It is about the wish to destroy everything around you. On the other hand, other people hear it differently. One person argued with me very convincingly that this is a song that came together after the Civil War, that it's a Southern song, that the mountain is the federal government, is the occupying Union Army and the armies of Reconstruction, and this former Confederate, if it takes all of his generations, he will be like a mole burrowing under this oppressive structure until it's rooted down. You know, in that sense, this song is anything but old, anything but a relic.
Yes.
That is the Tea Party in the United States right now. That is their goal. That is their definition. That is their strategy. But you're right, of course. It's a song about destruction. It's a song about sex and fear that your lover is cheating on you. It's a song about malevolent forces, the railroad men who are going to drink up your blood like wine. It just goes back and forth.
It's a conspiracy theorist song, really, isn't it?
I guess, you know, it goes back and forth between nihilism and carnality. Mm. There's that line, I wish I was a lizard in the spring. And when I hear that, I think of a lizard just lying in the sun and baking in the sun, as, you know, we've all seen lizards do. And Robert Cantwell, who I mentioned just a few minutes ago, talked about how that's a symbol of the sexual unworthiness that all men feel. They feel inadequate and impotent and hopeless and helpless. I never heard that, but Bob Neuwirth, the musician and singer Bob Neuwirth, when he sings this song, he says, I wish I was a lizard in your spring. Just changes one word, and that completely opens up that verse as, you know, a metaphor for pure sex. So you don't know what to make of this song, and sometimes I hear Bascom Lamar Lunsford as someone giving a sermon, pronouncing judgment on humanity and himself, and I hear the banjo as sort of inexorable and not as if it's played by any actual person, just this sound of fate. And yet listening to it just now, I was struck by how happy he sounded. There's an ache in his voice in almost every phrase, but he sounds just so pleased to be able to tell this story, and the banjo sounded jaunty and high-stepping and
but the banjo
just out in a spring.
You point out in the book that the banjo is in a little world of its own in this song, isn't it? I mean, it and the voice are seldom really together.
That's right. That's right.
There's a quote from Bascom Lamar Lunsford in the book. A song tells a story. A man ought to sing it like it was a fact. And he does, doesn't he? There's no real interpretation, as where he might sound angry, as you say, he sounds in control.
Well, he is. It's not just singing things as if they are facts, as if they're true, but there's also a matter of fact tone. When he says, "I wish I was a mole in the ground," he sings it as that's just the most ordinary thing in the world to want to be, and that's completely disarming, and at the same time makes what he's saying even more strange than if he were to say in some melodramatic voice of the crypt, spooky way, "I wish I was a mole in the ground." Then that disarms the line itself right there. It just takes all the punch out of it. It's like giving the punchline before you even tell the joke. Mm. And he just says, well, of course I want to be a mole in the ground. Haven't you ever wanted to be a mole in the ground? Of course you have. So let's talk about that. It's just in that way. And that's spookier than any special effects could ever be.
You're listening to The Music Show. I'm talking to Greil Marcus about his new book, Three Songs, Three Singers, Three Nations. Three nations. Which nation does this recording reveal, Greil?
Well, you know, we were saying it makes its own little country. It makes its own little world. And it is an America where that is animated by fantasies of freedom, of transformation, of abandoning your identity and becoming someone or something else. It's also a nation of fear, a place of terror and domination, and a will to defeat whatever forces seem to be oppressing you. So it's a song, ultimately a song about freedom, and it's a song about the struggle to be free and to find your own kind of freedom, whether in whatever form it might take. And that's as close to a definition of America as a kind of fable, as a kind of story that America has always told itself and told the world, as you'll find. And yet it's all paradox. There's nothing straightforward about it. There's nothing simple about it. Yes, you could listen to this song all your life and not fathom it.
We know plenty about Bascom Lamar Lunsford. He was a singer, he was a banjo player, he was a lawyer. We've got photographs and films and interviews, and there are people who remember him. But what do we know about Geeshy Wiley?
You know, for many years, the ghostly nature of her greatest song, and she made several recordings in 1930. They're all quite distinctive and remarkable, but Last Kind Words Blues is not like anything she did and not like anything else anybody else ever did. And no one who hears that recording comes away, with any kind of casual reaction. People say, what is that? Who is that? What's happening? I have to hear it again. It violates, it breaks anybody's expectations. And it is a song about death, and it's a song full of ghosts. And that element in the song was for many, many years, up until just about 2 years ago, perfectly congruent with the fact that nobody knew anything about her. Somebody named Geeshy Wiley, or somebody who was calling herself Geeshy Wiley, because Geeshy is so obviously a nickname, it's not anyone's real name, comes to Wisconsin in 1930 to make records with her partner, L.V. Thomas. And they make records, and some of them are released, and then they go back to wherever they came from, and that's all anyone ever hears of them. They disappear. No one knows where they were from. No one knows their real names, let alone their ages or when they died, assuming that they did. Nobody knows anything. And for decades, people searched, and blues researchers interviewed people who claimed to have known them or claimed to have known someone who claimed to have known them. And people got absolutely nowhere. It wasn't until John Jeremiah Sullivan, a music writer and cultural historian, published The Ballad of Geeshy and Elvie in the New York Times Magazine in 2014, that the real lives of these people were revealed. For Elvie Thomas, her whole real life, really, and for Geeshy Wiley, at least up to about 1931. He had cracked the case like a detective, that people had a cold case that people had been working on for decades. I won't take up all of our time detailing how he did this. But now we know a lot about Geeshy Wiley. We know what her real name was. We know when she was born. We don't know when she died. And yet the mystery in her song hasn't been diluted or evaded at all. The song is a great work of art, and a great work of art makes its own claims. In some ways, it makes the biography of its creator irrelevant, because no one's biography, not mine, not yours, not Gishi Wiley's, not Beethoven's, not Einstein's, can account for what any given person does, who that person becomes, what that person might create or fail to. So the fact that we know facts about Gishi Wiley now doesn't obviate the mystery in her work.
Well, let's listen to the song Gishi Wiley and Last Kind Word Blues.
If I die in the German war, I want to send my body, send it to my mother-in-law.
Gishi Wiley was singing, and L.V. Thomas was playing guitar. Last Kind Words Blues, recorded in 1930. It's one of the three songs that Greil Marcus considers in Three Songs, Three Singers, Three Nations. That's a very strange song, isn't it? I mean, it's hardly a blues at all, Greil.
You know, it's a blues in feeling. It's
yes.
A blues in spirit. It's in a minor key, which is very uncharacteristic of blues. The word structures are more are closer to folk music than to blues, pre-blues folk music. There are images and there are lines in this song that never appeared, as far as anyone knows, in any song before and never in any song after. You know, if I die in the German war, just send my body, send it to my mother-in-law. That line is so strange and so surprising and unexpected that there are people who hear it and refuse to hear what it says. They can't send my body to my mother-in-law. No, it must be send my money to my mother-in-law. That at least makes sense. It's so clear that she says body. And yet there are also elements in this song that come from hundreds of other songs. It's this strange merger of the absolutely individual and idiosyncratic with the commonplace and the shared. My mother told me, in blues, in American folk music, there's only one time when your mother tells you anything, and that's just before she dies, which is what we hear in this song. She says, the Mississippi River, and again, an American song. You can't say the Mississippi River without saying, you know, it's deep and wide, and she does that. And then she says, I can stand right here, see my face from the other side, and she just instantly scrambles you. What? What? What does that mean? Where is she? What is she talking about? She gives you, she is like a magician who sets you up with something that you can accept and that you're familiar with and makes you comfortable, and then she just pulls the rug right out from under you. This is a song, and this is a story that, I mean, I was trying to say before that there's a way in which this song contains her own disappearance from history as soon as she made this song, so that it's almost as if she never existed. Now, that isn't true today. We know, thanks to John Jeremiah Sullivan, we know a lot about her. And yet, when you listen to her sing, she doesn't sound quite real. She doesn't sound quite alive. This really is a ghost singing.
Yes, yes. And that is, as far as you're concerned, her nation, that the song is actually her world, isn't it? It creates her.
It's a world of disappearance. It's a world of specters where nothing is quite real, where nothing holds its shape. And in a way, I call this chapter Disappearance and Forgetting. And there's a way in which America is about amnesia, is about forgetting, is necessary to forget what happened in order to maintain the notion, even the illusion, that you're free, that you can reinvent yourself and symbolically reinvent the country at any time. So in some ways, it's very fitting that this, you know, this angel of death appears out of nowhere, leaves behind this song that might be heard as a blessing, might be heard as a curse, and then goes back where she came from. And we're left to ponder it all.
You're listening to The Music Show on RN. I'm talking to Greil Marcus about his book, Three Songs, Three Singers, Three Nations. The other song is Ballad of Hollis Brown, Bob Dylan's song. You say in the book, in relation actually to I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground, the song finds the singer. But in a way, that's true of this song as well, although we know that Bob Dylan wrote The Ballad of Hollis Brown.
One of the things that's so fascinating about this song is that it feels as if it wasn't written by any particular person. It has the shape, it has the body, and it has the voice of some traditional folk song. I wanted to write a book about three songs that felt as if they had no authors, as if they simply came out of the ground and people found them. Bascom Lamar Lunsford's I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground really is that kind of song. Nobody can trace any element in it to any specific anything. At some point, these lines, some of which are commonplace from other songs, some of which are not, came together, locked together, and became a song. But no one knows when that happened, where it happened, or where any part of it came from. With Gishi Wiley's Last Kind Words Blues, some of the lines are absolutely specific to her. The whole overall performance, the way the guitar works, the way she stretches out words, some of that is completely her and is new to the world, something new under the sun, and parts of it are traditional and inherited and borrowed and shared. With Ballad of Hollis Brown, this is a song that one person wrote. We know who this person is. We're all familiar with him. He released this song on a specific record on a specific time. We know absolutely everything about it, and yet it doesn't sound like a song that he wrote at all. It sounds like a song that he found crawling out of the ground. Picked it up, said, I know what to do with this.
Hollis Brown, he lived on the outside of town. Hollis Brown, he lived on the outside of town. With his wife and five children and his cabin broken down. You looked for work and money and you walked a ragged mile. You looked for work and money and you walked a ragged mile. Your children are so hungry that they don't know how to smile.
Ballad of Hollis Brown by Bob Dylan. It's one of the three songs, three singers, three nations that Greil Marcus discusses in his book of that title. You talk in the book, Greil, about the fact that there was a real Stagger Lee, there was a real Frankie in the Frankie and Johnny song. There was even quite possibly a real John Henry who died with a hammer in his hand. But in this case, there isn't a real Hollis Brown. But by the end of the song, we really feel that there was, because simply because of that map reference to a South Dakota farm, suddenly it becomes very specific, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And when I began to think about this song, because this song has not been an obsession for me, it's not something I've carried around with me for 45 years as I have with I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground, or 20-some years as I have with Last Kind Words Blues. I mean, it's a song I always knew, but, you know, it wasn't anything special to me. And then thinking about this book, it became so, and I began to wonder about it. And I have convinced myself that, yeah, I kind of remember a news story of something like that happening around that time. And I thought, well, this must have been based on a real event. So I, you know, began to search and came up with absolutely nothing. Dylan says, no, I don't remember, you know, anything specific. It was just a song. He used to introduce it on stage when he was first performing it. He'd say, this is a true story. But if it was a true story in 1963, 64, when he was performing it, people would have known that reference. Well, nobody did.
But of course, it becomes a true story, you know, every other month, doesn't it? There is a story similar in the newspapers.
Well, the fact is that stories like this are commonplace throughout American history. Michael Lessie, in his book Wisconsin Death Trip, which is about the effect of the Great Depression of the 1890s on rural Wisconsin, will tell, you know, and it's a collage of photographs by a small-town photographer and items from the local newspaper and the local mental asylum. There's stories like this all over the book. Stories like this have taken place in real life all over the country for hundreds of years, and they're endemic to urban life today. Man kills wife, sister-in-law, children, self. We see that story at least once a year, and often much more frequently than that. So yes, it's a brilliant thing to do, to say on a South Dakota farm, which locks the reality of the song into you. And yet there's something completely timeless and elemental, prosaic, and symbolic about the story that he tells. This story not only could happen anywhere at any time, as you listen, it is happening anywhere at any time. There is no historical time in this song.
It's a fabulous book. I enjoyed reading it very much, Greil Marcus. It's called Three Songs, Three Singers, Three Nations, and it's published by Harvard University Press. Thank you very much for being my guest on The Music Show. We look forward to the next time.
Well, it was a great privilege to talk to you. Thank you.
And our thanks to KPFA in Berkeley, California, for the use of that studio.